here's a story from The World.
China's economic transformation over the past two decades has had huge reverberations across the globe. We've been examining the impacts all fall through a reporting project called On China's New Silk Road. China's economic ambition started with factories, making the world's clothes and toys. Then China moved into becoming a world leader in cutting-edge technologies. The telecommunications giant Huawei is a great example. Today, reporter Mary Kay Magstad focuses on that, China's digital power play.
5G, short for the fifth generation of telecommunications systems, is just beginning to roll out around the world. Compared to the current 4G systems, it'll transmit much more data, much faster, with more capacity and less latency. It'll be able to power the Internet of Things, communicating with your smart thermostat, smart appliances, perhaps with your driverless electric car. But since 2012, the U.S. government has told U.S. companies to avoid Huawei equipment in general because of security concerns. These days, that goes especially for Huawei's 5G, because of everything else that will be built on top of that platform. The Trump administration and President Trump himself have been urging U.S. allies in Latin America and around the world to avoid Huawei too.
We convinced many countries, and I did this myself for the most part, not to use Huawei because we think it's an unsafe security risk. It's a big security risk. I talked many countries out of using it. If they want to do business with us, they can't use it.
One concern is that Huawei equipment itself may have vulnerabilities or backdoors that allow Chinese state security to access user data, as some U.S. equipment has been discovered to have, sometimes put there on foreign exports by the National Security Agency, or NSA. Huawei denies having backdoors. Whether it does or not, a Chinese law passed in 2017 says Chinese citizens and organizations, including companies, must help Chinese intelligence organs if they ask for help.
So in other words, if you're using the Chinese technology, your data is not just in those private companies' hands, such as Google or Apple. Your data is essentially at the hands of Chinese Communist Party.
This is Xiao Chang. He's a native of Beijing, now at the University of California at Berkeley's School of Information. He directs its Counterpower Lab, an interdisciplinary research group that focuses on digital rights and internet freedom.
The Chinese Party state, when they have the access of those data and with the technology behind it, they can use it for its own political, economic, security, strategic benefits, which not necessarily added the benefit of the users of these country and governments.
We have been open to be analyzed, to be tested, to be reviewed. That is not a situation that we need to discuss.
This is Adriana Marino, who at the time she's speaking here was head of Huawei Latin America's marketing and communications for businesses, based in Huawei's regional headquarters in Mexico City. Marino insisted when we talked that Huawei equipment and networks are secure.
Because, of course, security is one of the most important things that we have in all the programs that we run and all the products and services that we give.
Huawei does not share any of its data with the Chinese government?
No, we don't.
You're saying Huawei does not share any of its data with the Chinese government?
I'm saying that we don't share information with the Chinese government yet.
Customer data, consumer data?
Yes, correct.
Because there's a law that passed in China that said that if the Chinese government asks, companies have to do it.
I think that all those type of informations are a lot of speculations.
Xiao Chang doesn't buy that.
You will never see in China Huawei to say, oh, we don't provide this data. And they may publicly saying that. In the reality, they actually have the backdoor API in their database being built, directly being accessed by the Chinese state intelligence, by the Chinese military intelligence. They are so entangled together, it's more than just a contractual use between the two parties. Right? It's a lack of the line.
And he says that's not just true for Huawei.
In China, the issue is this authoritarian state, this autocratic system, is very, very opaque. It's not transparent. You don't know what technology are actually being developed and used and what link between the militaries and those Chinese tech companies. What we do know is that none of them are independent from the party control.
The form of generalized surveillance and political repression that most concerns me is the pervasive surveillance of WeChat, which is the chat and everything else app that pretty much all Chinese people who use smartphones are going to be using.
This is Graham Webster.
I'm a research scholar and I edit the DigiChina project at the Stanford Cyber Policy Center.
And he lived in China for a few years, at a time when many people outside of China still thought the internet and tech could open China up. China's Communist Party was never keen on that idea, and under President Xi Jinping, it's doubled down on control.
You know, it used to be that you could have text messages or just hang out in restaurants or on the street corner and have relatively open conversations. And now so much happens through WeChat, really constantly. It's like a lot of other places in the world where people are staring at their smartphones all the time now instead of talking to each other. And that stuff is surveilled and it's censored and it's done in a way where there is substantial targeting of people who might discuss something that is especially of concern to the government. But it's more about the deterrent effect. People are afraid to talk about sensitive issues because they might get detected and they might get targeted.
But the U.S., Israel, and some European countries also sell surveillance equipment, and some would say it's just business. Some also do their own surveillance, at home and abroad. Edward Snowden's 2013 revelations of just how much surveillance the United States had been doing, including on allies like German leader Angela Merkel, still stings in Germany.
I think Snowden showed us how the innocence of the belief in the free internet that was facilitating more openness, more transparency, more democracy was basically not there anymore.
Anne Roth is a policy advisor for a German parliamentary group called The Left.
My point of view in this is that any kind of mass surveillance happening in communications infrastructure is very bad for any type of democracy, because once you know that you're being surveilled, you change the way you behave, you change the way you talk. And personally, I don't really care who the surveillance is coming from. I think all of this is really bad.
That said, some Europeans were left feeling after the Snowden revelations that if both the U.S. and China could spy through their telecommunications networks, why not just go with the one that was cheapest? And yet, European attitudes toward Huawei and Chinese tech are changing. Whether because of U.S. pressure or because of their own review of risks, a growing number of European countries, the U.K., France, Germany, Belgium, and Italy among them, have chosen partners other than Huawei for their 5G networks or are considering that step. Several are also phasing out existing Huawei equipment. In Italy's business capital, Milan, one European suggests a pragmatic reason why it's in Europe's interests not to use Huawei 5G.
My name is Stefano Zanero. I'm an associate professor at Politecnico di Milano, which is Italy's largest university of engineering. We have 42,000 students, and according to some rankings, we are university number 16 in the world for engineering.
We're talking in a basement lab with tangerine and lemon yellow walls and with Legos in front of us and a foosball table in the next room. Very Silicon Valley. Stefano actually takes his top students there and to DEF CON Capture the Flag, where they compete in white hat hacking. That is, they attack computer networks to see if their defenses hold up as a way of helping those systems improve their defenses. Stefano says honing skills like these is crucial for Europe's tech future. So is fostering the know-how to build 5G networks and all that will be built on top of them.
Now, the choice of who you ask to build the 5G network is important because whoever gets the more contracts will have more resources to do research. So in 10 years, we will be building the 6G network. If we give a lot of contracts for 5G networks to a single player, there's going to be a single player able to build the next generation network.
That alone, he says, is a good reason to support the two European countries doing 5G, Ericsson in Sweden and Nokia in Finland. So is the fact that whoever controls a country's strategic infrastructure has leverage over the client and could perhaps say, we're not going to do maintenance. We're not going to give you any more spare parts. And then there's this.
Cultural elements are embedded in the way the technology is built. For a Chinese engineer, the concept of building, for instance, a way for a legitimate authority to snoop into a conversation, I think is way less of an ethical problem or of a mental problem than for an engineer in the US. In particular in the US, I think most citizens feel very strongly about defending their First Amendment rights. They feel so strongly about it that it is the First Amendment to the US Constitution, right? It's kind of an important deal.
Yeah, people fought and died for this.
Right. And the same happened in Italy. The Italian Constitution says exactly the same thing as the First Amendment says. It protects the right of people to express their opinion, in particular if their opinion is critical of the government. So that's the value we share. And that value, in some ways, ends up being built in the technology we build. And the Chinese applications, you can bet on it, express their own cultural values.
From the perspective of the U.S. military, given that the U.S. and China, and now the European Union and China, are systemic rivals, why help China catch up on strategic capabilities any more quickly than it's already doing?
Where China is already ahead, you see a lot of important technologies on the left where China already has the lead.
This is Michael Brown, director of the U.S. Defense Department's Defense Innovation Unit. He's speaking at a virtual Stanford Hoover Institution conference on digital authoritarianism. His slide shows China ahead in facial recognition software, cryptocurrency, small drones, electric batteries and electric vehicles, solar energy, quantum communications, which can ensure encrypted communications for the user while cracking everyone else's encryption, and 5G.
Here's where we were as a country, asleep at the switch. Over time, we've let our key telecommunications equipment suppliers leave the United States. And so there, you could argue, we're already pretty far behind. And we either need to be neutralizing China's advantage with something like the Open Radio Access Network, which is being promoted now, how you virtualize 5G so our software strengths come into play. Or we got to leapfrog them and go into 6G.
This matters not just for ease of using the internet, but also for strategic reasons. Mike Brown said in his talk that of eight key technologies China is developing for military use, seven are commercial technologies. Mike Brown says the U.S. government urgently needs to do more of that kind of investment, the kind that once sent men to the moon.
We need to really imagine launching or ushering in a new era of technological achievement. And that happens when we combine the strengths of government set moonshots, all the strengths of academia and government money flowing through those systems to make sure that we can realize those goals.
That could start with Congress being more willing to allocate money for basic research. But another theme at this conference was that the United States needs to work more closely with its allies and set a better example of embedding democratic values in how tech and all things digital are regulated. Graham Webster from the DigiChina Project at Stanford's Cyber Policy Center couldn't agree more.
I think if the U.S. companies, much to their chagrin, are forced to develop adaptations to their products that really consider and ensure democratic integrity and really respect privacy, freedom of expression, and in a fairly costly way, I'm sure, reconfigure their business model so that the whole thing isn't depending on people paying to manipulate your behavior through advertising, then these could be some pretty darn compelling products around the world, right? If there's a whole technological ecosystem that is more respecting of freedoms and privacy and data security, then that would contrast with the Chinese offerings, which are built for surveillance and manipulation and, frankly, for lower cost.
Meanwhile, what the Trump administration has done is make it much harder for Huawei to get semiconductors, the chips that drive our digital world. China does not yet have the know-how nor the sophisticated fabrication plants to make these. Most are made in the United States, Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, and the Netherlands.
And basically, all of the top semiconductors now are designed using software that can't be regulated by the U.S. government. So in the case of someone like Huawei, who's been targeted by the U.S. government for many years, if they are completely cut off from the most advanced semiconductors, that could slow their progress in various types of applications all over the map, from the cell phones that they sell with the really good cameras to the 5G infrastructure that the U.S. government really wants to prevent from being widely adopted around the world.
Which might be a U.S. advantage in the short term, but in the longer term, Graham says, that could lead to a splintered internet.
The Chinese government has been determined to build a more independent capacity in things like semiconductors for a long time. Now, there's absolutely no reason for them to back off on that. Now there's reason to go faster and faster and to just make all efforts to catch up, because the U.S. has demonstrated that it's willing to use this core technology as leverage or as a way to undermine crucial Chinese companies.
One school of thought is, once China starts breaking away and creating a separate internet with separate standards and norms, the argument goes, it'll bifurcate the world, with the U.S. and its allies on one side, and on the other, authoritarian states, sure, but also developing countries that perhaps could only afford to buy Chinese technology and not the more expensive stuff, especially if the quality is roughly comparable. And that argument says it would be hard, if not impossible, to put the splintered internet back together again. China's goals are clear. With momentum on its side from hundreds of billions of dollars spent over the past two decades to increase innovation and build up expertise in cutting-edge technologies. Even without its great global ambition, China would have incentives to invest in a high-tech future. Its economic growth is slowing, its population is aging, and China's tech industry has been an effective engine driving China's economic growth over the past decade. The vision is for that to continue, as China's digital Silk Road rolls out around the world, offering high quality and value for money, if not always the values embedded in that technology that all those on the receiving end might choose.
Mary Kay Magstad reporting for the project on China's New Silk Road, a podcast about China's Belt and Road Initiative from the Global Reporting Center. Thanks to Melissa Chan for her reporting on this story. You're listening to The World. From PRX.